30. Am I dead? I ask. And then I mentally adjust for the fact that I am one of three people. Is he dead? I'm not sure, Flores says. We were separated on the mountain. He gave himself up to save me. That was before Boone's people found me. You ever catch up with him? Stray fire from a drone dropped him. Huh. He's unmoved by the news. He wasn't all bad in the end, I say, surprised by my defense of the man. Flores gives a nod like he already knew that. When you're up against the kind of people we're facing, most bad men look good in comparison. Langdon rubs his head. It must be hard to hear that in 7 years, you'll be a monster of a man responsible for the deaths of hundreds of people, not to mention an entire town being ripped through time. But if he's right, the man before us will never become that monster. They are separate and disconnected by time and space. In theory, the only real way to test that would be to kill someone from the past and observe what happens to his future self. Someone expendable. Someone like me. If the future me, the rebel leader waging war against his former employer, is still alive. How does that happen? How did we get to this? We meet a year from now. You hire me a few months before this place becomes a shit show. When my wife dies of cancer, Langdon says, cloaked in a shroud of dismay. What killed her in the future will still kill her now, but in a year's time. You might not become a madman, but the sting of death will leave its mark. It's already got its talons in him. I can see it in his eyes. Cancer, I say. You're expecting something else? Your older self claimed the people of Black Creek killed her, said the country was on the brink of civil war. Never happened, Flores says, and our country was a mess for a while, but was actually on the mend. He was fishing for sympathy, trying to improve his image, which means he's probably not done with you. Peachy keen, Kuzneski says. He's done with me, though, right? Flores looks at Kuzneski for a moment, but says nothing. Then he turns to me. I've been with you, with him, ever since. Wrecking your truck, that was you. And it wasn't just to protect you, it was to keep you out of the way. Not that it helped. He could have told me the truth. He didn't think so. I'm having a hard time believing I wouldn't trust my future self just 7 years from now. Am I really that blindly loyal? Would I have defended Synergy even from myself? From Cassie? Without the experiences of the past day, without seeing everything for myself, maybe I would have. At the very least, I would have slowed them down. Not that it helped, like Flores said. My future self might have inspired Flores and Cassie and those other folks now dead in the woods to fight the good fight, but he wasn't prepared for this. And now his people are dead. Knowing exactly how hard that will be for him, I determined not to repeat his mistakes. Problem is, I'm even less prepared for this dangerous new Synergy, not to mention everything we've encountered along the way. What do I have? Flores, if he'll follow a younger version of his friend, Kuzneski and Cassie. My father and Owen are a no-go, but Enola, who is, as far as I know, still stalking the mountainside, will fight for her people. Five people against a futuristic army, who our more prepared, more heavily armed counterparts couldn't handle. Step one is getting the hell out of this prison, which shouldn't be hard. With evil Kuzneski the only guard, all we really need to do is either trick him or wait for someone new to open that door. If he's facing his younger self, he won't pull the trigger. Won't risk killing him. But once we're outside, where endless drone eyes are watching, it won't be long before we're discovered. And when that happens, we're minigun paste. We'll need to get to the trees. If we can find Enola and... You're doing it, Flores says. I snap out of my machinations. Doing what? Planning, he says. You make a face. You do, Cassie says. It's kinda like... Kuzneski stares off at nothing while moving his eyebrows up and down. Like a golden retriever in deep thought, only not as smart. Kuzneski manages to get smiles out of Cassie and Flores, and I can see how they'd be friends, united by my future self, who is not here. And if I am, I ask, I'd rather fight and die, Flora says, then give up and live. Kuzneski raises his hand. Is there a fight and live option? Because, you know, that's probably better. I mean, you sound super badass, like John McClane badass, but I'm partial to not getting shot, or eaten, or whatever the hell else has been going on out there. That's the plan, I say, fight and live. Is it? Kuzneski asks. Because really, what would be the plan? I mean, how do we stop all this? That's what he's going to tell us. I point to Langdon, who shrinks in on himself a bit. As much as he doesn't like who his future self has become, he's a scientist, not a fighter. And he's not crazy. Not yet. Even if we stop the time, when I can tell he's struggling to come up with the right word, I offer. Flux. That's what I've been calling it. Time flux? He says it like the words taste bad, but he moves past the issue. Even if we stop it, we still have to deal with all this. He motions to the room's four walls, but his imaginary reach envelops all of Synergy and the monstrous creation standing sentinel over it. One problem at a time, I tell him. But the quick version is this. If we can cut the power, it will interrupt his ability to control the drones. They can operate autonomously, Flores says. But they need to recharge, I point out. I saw the docking bays. No power, no recharge. He'll have a window to reverse what we've done, but... So we make it irreversible, Cassie says. Leaving all of us without power, Langdon says. In the past, with no way to return. Huh? With no what? Kuzneski says. Langdon rubs his forehead, looking a bit piqued. We're in a new dimension, and with every flux, we move on to another. There is no future for us to return to, because here, the future has not yet happened. The year in which we stop will be our home forever. That takes a moment to sink in. If I wasn't sitting already, I'd have plopped down into the chair. Kuzneski leans against the door and slides down to the floor. He doesn't have a wife or children, but he was close to his brother and his parents. Now he knows he'll never see them again, no matter the outcome. Cassie steps closer to me, putting a hand on my shoulder. I take her hand and hold it tight. Whatever happens, at least we're in this together. With my father. And Owen. And maybe even Cassie's younger self. At least I have my family, I think. And then I realize that for the first time since I was a day older than Owen, I've got a lot to lose. And now you're caught up to me, Flores says. That's about as far as I got with him before you arrived. He was about to tell me how all of this is possible. I don't know, Langdon insists. But you have an idea, I say. A hypothesis? He squeezes his hands like he's holding two invisible stress balls. Synergy was built for the express purpose of detecting subatomic particles, like the Higgs boson. Higgs bosom? Kuzneski asks. Langdon grunts his disapproval and continues. The Higgs boson is also known as the God particle, simply because of its importance to the standard model of particle physics. We're looking for its antithesis. So, I say, the devil particle? While I'm not exactly a churchgoer, the analogy does not help put me at ease. I prefer to call it the Langdon particle, but for those who prefer quirky nicknames, yes, it is the antiparticle to the Higgs boson. Together, they create a kind of supersymmetry that keeps the entire universe stable. Where the God particle contributes to universal mass, binding things together, the devil particle is the force pushing the multiverse ever farther apart. Theoretically, I have yet to discover the particle. But if it is real and the hypothesis correct, it is possible that my future self found a way to disrupt the two-particle symmetry, releasing gravity waves capable of bending time and space. How could two little particles bend time and space? Kuzneski asks. If you believe that all of creation came from a subatomic particle a million, billion, billion times smaller than an atom, then this is really just par for the course. When it comes to the subatomic and theoretical physics, size often doesn't matter. And if all that is accurate, I ask, how would we stop it? He looks confused for a moment. I thought that was already established. When no one speaks, he says, cut the power. That's it? Kuzneski says. Well, it would stop the reaction, free the particles from whatever effect is controlling them, Langdon says. The collider has been running this whole time. How do you know that? Cassie asks. Listen, Langdon says, and everyone goes still. In the silence that follows, I don't hear much other than voices on the door's far side, but I feel a gently pulsing vibration beneath my feet. I felt the same outside when standing on Synergy's concrete foundation. I'm about to ask how to cut the power when I notice the vibration growing more intense. And I'm not alone. Kuzneski says. Langdon grips the bed cushion. It's happening again. When none of us reacts with more than a groan, he says, Hold on to something. The reaction is quite powerful at the epicenter. The roaring buzz explodes around us, along with a mind-bending warping of everything I can see, time and space bending before my eyes. Then I'm lifted off the floor and sent flying into the ceiling.